Hi, I'm Bella Gandhi, founder of Smart Dating Academy and your host of this beautiful podcast. We're here to bring more love into your life, regardless of if you're single, if you're married, if you're thinking about becoming single, if you're thinking about becoming married or finding the lid to your pot. And we're going to bring more life into that love that you have or you want. You might have seen me on Good Morning America or Steve Harvey or the Today Show or 100 other places, but I'm so happy that you are here with us because we're going to make your life and your love better. Smart daters, welcome back to this episode. I'm jumping out of my skin, excited to have Todd Barrett with us. You guys, he knows what he's talking about. He's a therapist. He's an author, a best-selling author, a podcast host. Todd, welcome to the Smart Dating Academy podcast.
Thank you for having me.
It is so good to have you. So tell us about how you got to be you.
Well, I was born. how I got to be a therapist, how I got to the place where I am, where I'm speaking with you right now, is really just a personal, very personal journey. I started therapy when I was 15. Well, I started therapy when I was 10. And then at 15, I met the therapist that I still see today. I actually had a session earlier today with him. And it was in that relationship, that therapeutic relationship, that which is where my journey really started to becoming who I am today. I had a wonderful experience with him. He quite literally saved my life. I also found that in therapy, the more I learned about myself, the better I felt. And so that led me to read, which led me to study psych in college and go to grad school to become a therapist. But it comes from a very personal space in terms of the work that I've done on myself in therapy, really led me to become a therapist.
I love that. And in particular, you're a sex therapist, correct?
Yes, I'm a sex therapist. And so most people, when they hear that, they think that I'm just talking about orgasms, dicks, and clits all day, which is, sometimes, we talk about that. But the reality of sex therapy is that it's about a lot of relational anxiety. So regardless of what's happening, we are also talking about attachment, connection, love, intimacy, all of those different things. The sex is about so much more than just the physical place of lust that it often gets assigned to. So I see clients that are coming into me for stuff related to sex and unrelated to sex. It just means that I have an extra specialization in sex.
I love that, but you're right. It's all related. So, Tell us about your new book.
Yeah, my new book. It came out a couple weeks ago, I guess now, June 4th.
Yeah.
It's called How to Love Someone Without Losing Your Mind. I really poured my heart and soul into it. It is not a typical self-help book, but definitely a book that readers will read and get a lot of help from. I use my story in therapy, my experience as a therapist, to tell a story about love, relationships, and life. And I talk about a lot of the universal themes that we all experience, everything from falling in love and being in the honeymoon period to heartbreak, grief, and loss, and family trauma. So I really cover a lot of ground in the book.
Okay, well, tell us a couple of your favorite gems from the book, because I know we're all going to race out and order the book and we'll put the book in the show notes. So kind of tell us, you covered a lot, the honeymoon phase, being in a relationship, grief, loss, heartbreak. Like, let's go there. Falling in love.
All of those things. Yeah. I mean, one of the things that I was writing the book as I was going through heartbreak. And so a lot of what I wrote about relational endings, I was kind of going through in one way or another. And to me, whenever I think about the parts of the book that I like the most, it's those parts, because they almost helped me get through it. I talk about relational endings as being transformative. Mm-hmm. I talk about them as being part of the other end of the spectrum as a relational beginning, that we experience the same amount of growth. We build a new life. We become a new person at the end of a relationship and at the beginning of a relationship. The challenge is that culturally, new relationships, love, celebrated Valentine's Day, engagement parties, etc. But there's nothing really that we do to celebrate or even acknowledge some of the pain and growth that happens during relational endings. So I was really interested in that. You know, that's also what led me to become a sex therapist. No one at the time was talking about sex, but no one really talks about relational endings. The only time we give them is, you know, how long has it taken for you to move on? We think it's like in the movies where you go on a retreat and you come back and you get back to yourself and bippity boppity boo. But it can take a very long time to move on and to recover and to heal. That most people experience a great deal of shame for not being able to do faster. So it's one of my favorite parts of the book, because I think it's one of the most important parts of the book. Because if we're going to talk about love, we also have to talk about pain. And we also have to talk about heartbreak and relational endings, because it's all part of the same story. And the story that often gets the most attention is the love, is that kind of idealization, the romance, the focus on finding the right partner, all of this stuff. But what doesn't is the end of a relationship. And it's really actually very important to be able to end a relationship, and to be able to go through that and to be resilient and to learn and to grow and to then form better relationships. You know, that's the whole point of why we end a relationship, that it's no longer serving us and we want something more and better. So it's really important. It's also really important that people approach relationships as not this kind of life sentence thing, that they really understand and accept that relationships can end. And that doesn't have to be a bad thing. It might be painful, but it is a part of the journey if you're going to be a relational person.
I love how you're reframing that. And it's a breakup doesn't necessarily, I mean, granted, there's going to be heartbreak, but if you look at it as this reinvention or getting to the next level from a human and personal growth standpoint, that yeah, there's going to be some pain and treachery along the way, but you're going to become a new and improved you to some extent, or maybe a new and wiser you to some extent. So when let's say you know, somebody listening to this right now is going through heartbreak or just on the precipice of knowing they need to get out of a relationship, but having fear of ending it. Do you have any advice or a path forward for these people right now that are in a world of hurt?
Yeah, well, there's always going to be fear. There's no way to end a relationship without fear. There's no way to end a relationship without hurt. We have to simply trust in our capacity to be resilient and to make it through. The challenge with ending relationships is that we're told that if you can acknowledge that you'd want to end the relationship, that you should do it yesterday. But the reality is that it's not so easy to just simply come up across a thought that, oh, gee, I want to end this relationship. It's time. And then the next logical step might seem to be to end it. But for many people, it's not. Relationships are not an all good or all bad thing. We develop deep, deep attachments. Depending on how long the relationship, our lives can be completely integrated. And most relationships aren't 100% bad, that there are good things there. And we love and care about the other person usually. So it's not a simple matter of just saying, I want to end the relationship, but I'm going to do it now. For some people, they can. But for the majority of people, it takes a lot of work to get to the point where they can say the words to their partner and actually end the relationship. But many people feel a great deal of shame that they haven't done it sooner.
Yeah.
That they didn't do it sooner. So what I would say is, be patient with yourself, be kind to yourself. Don't judge yourself here. This is really hard. I would also say that the ending of a relationship is a couple's issue, and that many people take it upon themselves to bear the brunt of it, to bring it up, to talk about it, et cetera, because they're the ones that is feeling that. But what we often forget is that when we want to end a relationship, it's with the other person, and the other person may have an idea. They may not have an idea, but we, as their partner or ex-partner, whatever you want to call yourself at that point, do owe it to them to include them in this decision-making process. And that's really scary. But I think it's really crucial that people approach their relationship issues as couples issues. Many people are dealing with relationship issues as individual issues, complaining to everybody, but the person they should be talking to, which is their partner. So it might sound terrifying and ridiculous, but to start having these conversations with your partner, start having the conversations, I'm really unhappy. I don't know what to do. How are you doing here? What are we doing here? You know, to really start evaluating it, and to start sharing some of that burden, because it doesn't have to be this one day dawn on you and then the next day you say, I want to break up with you.
Right.
It's not this linear, easy path. So I always say to involve your partner in this, to start having conversations, even go to couples therapy. You can go to couples therapy and you can start the conversation off, say that, and you can have a couple of sessions. And the last session can be the ending, or get you to the place where you're feeling brave enough to end it. But, it's just so hard. It's a hard place to be.
It's really hard. And people often ask me, like, when am I going to feel better? Like, am I ever going to get better? Do you have any words of wisdom around that?
Yeah, I mean, I also write about this in my book, in the last chapter, which is another part of it called Give Up Hope. This idea of when will I get better? When will my life be better? When will I be better? And what that's fundamentally doing is it's neglecting the present. It's avoiding the present. It's resisting the present. Mm. And that's a barrier to personal growth. It's a barrier to growth in general. It's a barrier to being a functional and healthy human being that feels things. But collectively, culturally, we hate pain. We hate it.
Any
we fucking
kind of
hate
pain.
It.
Any pain.
Any kind of pain. And so people, when is it going to end? What can I do to make it better? And of course, you know, who wants to feel pain? But the reality is sometimes, especially during an ending, it's going to be really fucking painful. It's going to feel like open heart surgery. And the goal is to work through that pain, because it's working through that pain that you grow. When you try to work around it and you resist it, it persists. It persists. You cling to things to try to make it go away. It is just another way of denying what's real, which is the relationship's over. It's excruciating. It's painful. And it's going to take time to heal.
Right. And you will heal.
And you will.
And you will heal. So you talk about the society that we're in right now, and we tend to over pathologize normal day-to-day struggles. So what do you think are these cultural diagnoses or TikTok diagnoses? I'm curious. And with that being said, what are like real, true toxic traits, red flags? Like, let's go there.
Red flags, real toxic traits are like people that are mean, abusive, yelling, physically hurting you, contentious, talking down to you, manipulating you, lying to you, dishonesty, chronically. You know, that's some big red flags.
Agree.
But everything else, you know, I think there's a lot of nuance too. We have to really be a little bit more curious about how we're observing people and understanding them, rather than just judging them with the flags. But these cultural diagnoses, you know, really anything. It's literally anything. All relationship problems now are being formulated or reframed as unhealthy. All of them. You know, it's as if we're not allowed to experience challenge in our relationships without our relationship being unhealthy. And so we also approach ourselves under the same microscope in terms of, I didn't leave my relationship because I should have, or I should wait before I start dating again, or I should wait before I have sex because then they'll ignore me, or any of these kind of black and whites or shoulds. It's a problem, you know, and some of the things like people pleaser and codependency has become really trendy, and narcissist, and even just the word toxic. You know, we're doling out like candy, and I don't see anything wrong with using labels. You know, we have a label now for literally everything. And for some people, it brings them great solace. But the challenge that I do see is they can at times be extremely, extremely limiting. Because what a label does is it takes a huge, complex story and it compacts it into this one word. And so most people are just using the one word and not expanding on what the story means. So I'm less concerned with the labels and I'm more concerned with the stories behind them, whether that's for you or the other person. And I am seeing people applying these labels with a complete disconnection to their personal story and a complete disconnection from their partner's story as well.
And by that, do you mean that we're also lacking accountability to some extent for our role in whatever the conflict is?
Accountability, self-awareness, understanding, yeah. Compassion. I mean, we're really avoiding ourselves. Even if that person is a toxic narcissist, the more you focus on listing all of the behaviors that makes them a toxic narcissist and telling everyone that your ex was a narcissist, you really miss the story of what drew you to this person. You miss the story of, you know, what was so familiar about this behavior that made it normal for you to experience this in a relationship. You miss the story of your own childhood and potentially a parent that was narcissistic, whatever. But so this is why I become less and less interested in these labels and pop cultural diagnoses, is because, again, as my work as a therapist, I don't sit in session and just list off all of these labels for people to label the experiences they're having, right? I as a therapist, and most therapists, what we do is we help people connect with themselves better. And we don't do that by saying, were they a narcissist? Are you, like, what are the red flags? Well, that's not how therapy works. Therapy works by exploring our story, by revisiting childhood, by learning about how we learned how to love, by asking our parents what their intergenerational story was, by all of those things, developing a lot of self-awareness. So I'm rambling, but the labels, I think, are more limiting than helpful.
Yeah, I have people that'll come to me like, you know, I took the attachment quiz and I think I'm secure with the touch of anxious. I'm like, well, newsflash, we all play different characters on TV. And if you're, I'm like, I am secure now with a good partner. I've been married for over 20 years, but I was highly anxious when I was in a relationship with someone who was highly avoidant, right? So I'm like, these things are plastic, they morph. There's nothing that's set in stone, but we want the formula, we want the label, right? And to your point, why do we want that? Because we want to avoid pain. If I follow this trajectory, then I won't have pain. But the fact of the matter is, and I love that you're saying this, is that any true authentic relationship is going to have some conflict and some struggle.
Exactly.
Oh, that's great. Yes. So talk about hurt potential. I love this term.
Hurt potential. That is how we approach dating. We approach dating, analyzing all of the data points, usually just on a dating profile or off of one date, to figure out if someone is going to be a match, which is the translation, if they're going to hurt us, if we're going to experience pain, if this could be really unhealthy. So the hurt potential is basically a fancy way of experiencing anxiety about being hurt that we've been told is healthy. We've been told to analyze other people to figure out, are they going to hurt me? Are they bad people? Are they a bad match? So we can spend more time ruling people out than ruling people in, more time being afraid of being hurt than opening ourselves up and being vulnerable to connecting. Because if we're leading with fear, we're not present. If we're leading with expectations that this person isn't or is or whatever, we're also not present. So this idea of the hurt potential is just everywhere. It's everything that we do, actually. It doesn't even have to do with dating, but it's simply how we navigate life, is that we really try to do our best to navigate around hurt, and as we should. But there are some situations where it's not helpful, like going on a first date and focusing and judging and not being present or open or curious to hear about somebody, or not even giving someone a chance in the first place.
Yeah, completely. I mean, there are things, to your earlier point when I asked you about red flags, if you see those things in your communications, let's say you're on a dating app with somebody and they're throwing down, like, you know, just a lot of negativity, they're speaking down to you, they're inconsistent, they're unreliable, that's fine to say you don't want to go out with them. But then when you actually agree to go out with somebody, right, leading from a place of fear, when we look for what's wrong, we're going to see what's wrong.
We're gonna feel wrong too.
So is there a way to minimize your hurt potential? Is there talk that we can have with ourselves before we go out on a date? Acknowledging, yes, I am afraid of getting hurt because I'm human. But yeah, here's what I'm going to do on this date. Do you have any good script that we can play for ourselves in our minds?
I mean, the first thing is that people have to trust themselves more. You know, I talk to people and they're like, I'm afraid of dating. It's first date. I can't even respond to this message on the app. And, you know, it's about powerlessness. So you have to feel empowered. If you're going to date, you have to feel empowered and you have to feel connected to yourself and your capacity to say no, to say I can't, to say I got to go.
I love that. And not to
feel like you need to commit to somebody or have any sort of idea about commitment when you're meeting a literal stranger. So, you know, we have to connect with a powerful sense of self and a sense of confidence around we can do whatever the fuck we want to do. And I don't mean hurt people. I just mean like you could talk to somebody and delete the app. You could talk to somebody and then go meet them for coffee for 10 minutes and like say, oh my God, I gotta go. I'm sorry. So what? You were rude. I mean, okay. Like ideally that wouldn't happen, but like if that does happen, you are free to leave. You don't have to go on another date. You can tell the person you're not interested. So there's always an out. Many people are afraid that like, you know, if they go on a date that they can't leave. The other thing is, to really just stop judging people based on their profile 100%. Like just don't do it. And that's kind of impossible to some extent. Right. But I want people to open up and be more expansive to the experience of being surprised, to the experience of changing your perspective, to the experience of just being open to not having a perspective or an expectation, to just simply go with the expectation that it is an experiment and you just want to see if it feels good. And that's really it. And by feels good, I don't mean like, can you imagine marriage, children, shared property, and 5 dogs? I mean, you know, did you laugh? Were they like minimally pleasant to be around? Did they ask questions? Did it feel reciprocal? And would you want to do it again?
Right. Did you even
really have to lower the stakes? Yeah.
Right.
We really have to lower the stakes because people are approaching dating with way, way, way too much of a burden, a pressure about are they a good match? Are they the one? Will that work? If I am this and they are that, they live here and I live here. That's too far. You know, all of this kind of analysis and algebraic equations to figure out one, you know, will they hurt me? Two, will this work? Meanwhile, it's about someone usually that the person you don't know. And so this is what I mean about being open, curious, flexible, and more expansive, that it's just it's so, so crucial. And it's actually easier. It's so much easier. It's so much easier to just show up rather than have to show up and know that if you like them or not now or anything. And also most people, you know, again, like there are red flags, like you can, but they're red flags you might want to apply to anyone in your life. You know, if someone is mean and unsupportive and judgmental, you know, we don't want those people in our life. So you know, most people know this. So we don't have to do all of this fancy footwork to say, okay, like, you know, all of this is a list of things that you have to go and armed with to look for. Don't look for anything.
Right. And if they
just
do,
simply showing up is enough. Yeah. Oh my God, you have a red flag. That's great.
I'm waving a red flag for those that are just listening to this versus audioing it. But, it's so, so true. Tell me, you talk about a relationship contract. When do we do this? Mm-hmm. What is that?
A relationship contract is more of a symbolic thing, more of a metaphor, but it can be literal. A relationship contract is something basically that we negotiate throughout our relationship. Some people do it passive aggressively, but I'd really encourage people to do it right from the beginning in terms of what your expectations are, what your needs are, what your goals are, what you want to, the type of relationship that you want to co-create with a partner. You know, you are co-creators, you're co-writers, co-authors, co-whatevers. And having a shared vision or contract, if you want to use that word, is really important. And negotiating around that shared vision and exploring and being creative with it. So basically, I'm talking about the things that make relationships feel good. and what you want those things to be, and being curious about what your partner wants those things to be, and the things that don't feel good, and what you want to agree upon when conflict arises, or bad feelings or pain comes up, how you want to manage that. So it's just like any other contract, but it's based on emotional relational connection.
No, it's so true. We have those with each other, and even with our teenage kids, like, how do we navigate conflict with each other, right? Everybody's great when the sun is shining and things are going well, but when one of the wheels falls off, it's like, okay, here's how we will talk to each other about what hurt, what's not right. And anybody has the ability to use their voice to say, ouch, that hurt. Let's de-escalate this and come back to it in 30 minutes.
Yeah, that's great.
Right, family contract. And it's so important to have those things. And I tell my clients, put these together in what I call peacetime versus wartime, right? You can't establish new procedures in handling conflict and say, hey, I want to de-escalate this. Let's be like boxers and go back to our corners right now in the heat of the battle, right? You have to do that a week later where you've kissed and made up and say, hey, when we go down those paths again, how about we bullet 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, negotiate those contracts when you're feeling good and happy. You cannot do that in the middle of strife.
Yep. Totally.
What do you think is, without losing our minds, I love that, what's a step that we can all take today to improve our relationships?
Well, we are going to lose our mind, so there's that. The title is a bit of a bait and switch. But the things that we can do, it's actually not that hard. We can become self-aware. We can learn about ourselves. That's really it. And develop a connection to what it is that we're learning about ourselves.
How do you become more self-aware? If somebody's listening to this and they're like, well, I think
you could go to therapy. You could read my book. there are courses. Most therapists have online courses. I have an online course. Most therapists have online courses now. But it means self-awareness basically means developing a connection to earlier parts of yourself and understanding your journey from start to where you are now. So it's not that complicated. It's just like, okay, well, what was my childhood like? What was my mother like? What was my father like? Did I have a mother or a father? What was that like? You know, what were my siblings like? What was my role in the family? What was my role in my society and culture and my identity? What was I told I should desire, and versus what did I desire? What was the impact of religion? All of this stuff. You know, we want to know all of the things about ourselves. That's the best thing you can do for your relationship. The better you can connect to yourself, the better you can understand yourself, the better your relationships become.
That's so true. Because if you have the map to your insides, then you can hand that map to your potential partner and share, right? It's like if you have self-awareness, you'll have better relational awareness.
Yep. Yep. Exactly.
I love that. And I love that you're like, you will lose your mind. Like, accept that as just the bait and switch.
Yeah.
To be in any relationship.
To be alive.
To be alive, right? What did the Buddha say, right? Like,
it's
life
a crazy
is a
life.
Struggle.
Life is hard. Yeah.
It's a struggle. And when you accept that, you know, you'll be like, okay, what's today's struggle? How can I find the meaning in the mess?
Exactly.
Any last gems you wanted to throw on us in your vast knowledge base? Any way we can be better?
The self-awareness part, I think, is just really where it's at. Because self-awareness gives us choice. You know, we're not impulsively enacting our unconscious defenses. We can become more connected to how our traumas get triggered in our relationships. We can become less reactive, less angry, and collaborate better and co-author relationships better. We can have better sex. I mean, the list just goes on and on about how we can just simply improve our lives and our relationships by developing a better connection to ourselves. And that's not to say that you're not going to fuck up, if you, and that, you know, once you do get to that place of self-awareness that you're done, Or that, you know, you finally understand and develop insight around your childhood trauma and it's never going to come up again. No, it's going to keep coming up. It's going to keep coming. It may lessen over time. But the better you get to know it, the more you can welcome some of these things into your life as, you know, regular characters in your experience, the better you will be in terms of your capacity to tolerate it.
Such sage advice. Where can we get more of you, Todd?
You can get more of me on Instagram at @yourdiagnonsense or in my book.
And your book. And tell us
my book.
Your book again. Say it again for the people in the back.
How to Love Somebody Without Losing Your Mind.
Newsflash, you will lose your mind.
Yeah, that should have been the subtitle.
No, I like it. I like it just as it is. It's absolutely perfect. Well, thank you so much for being on our show.
Thank you for having me.
Yay. And listeners, I hope that you will take some time, like Todd said, to develop a little bit more self-awareness. We can never do enough. Dig back, look at your history. What were your parents like? What were they like with each other? What were they like with you, your siblings? What was your role in the family? Get to know, you know, we're so obsessed with looking at the map of the outside to protect ourselves. Get to know yourself on the inside for this week. So that is my homework to you. Stay psychotically optimistic about the chances of you finding love, because you know there is a lid to every pot and your pot is cute just the way it is. So until the next episode, I bid you farewell. Thanks for listening. And as always, download us, share us, show us the love. Follow Instagram at Smart Dating Academy. And if you or someone you know wants to learn more, check out our website at smartdatingacademy.com. We're here to bring you love.